Is it just me, or did COVID steal the bed bug thunder? I mean, at the time, bed bugs were hot. Everyone's like, bed bugs, bed bugs, bed bugs. Stanley Steamer probably made, I don't know, lots of money. So all I could say is, yeah, dog.
Time for The Tainted Glove, starring your favorite man of questionable character, Aloha Mr. Hand.
Hey, bud, let's party!
And the Holy Reverend K Fids himself. It's go time, so grab a beer, grab a bite, and settle in. It's time for The Tainted Glove.
Aloha! I'm your friendly man with more hair than the guy with questionable character, here for the season finale of The Tainted Glove, riding solo while my guy Mr. Hand is at the White Sox game like a good fan that he is, not missing out on those games. And because this is kind of like a tweener week, we normally go every other week at this point. We'll be back next week for our regular season premiere of season two of The Tainted Glove. But it's been 1 year since we kicked the tires on this little bad boy and broadcast our first show. So pretty excited, pretty pumped, and thankful that I've had a wonderful year with my guy, Mr. Hand. I know he's not here, but he also has given me input on some of his favorite moments. But tonight's show is really going to be, or this week's show is really going to be about celebrating some of the great moments that we've had on the show. We'll talk a little bit of baseball. I'm not gonna ignore some baseball. I do want to talk about Doctor Strange for a second. We may have a guest pop on here. I'm waiting to hear back from a current professional baseball player that said he possibly might jump on here with us if he can get back to the hotel in time, but I'm not sure he's going to be able to do that because he's got an off day, and off days you gotta let loose a little bit. So no guarantees there, but we're going to go over some of the, you know, some of the best moments from our first broadcast that took place May 3rd of 2021. And so this is now the season finale of season number one of The Tainted Glove. And it's been a long ride. It feels like it's been an instant though. It doesn't feel this long. But with Pete, being able to chat with Pete every, you know, some, you know, when we first started, it was every week, and now we're going to the every other week so we can continue to have content, along with the relationships we've built with our sister show, At The Show, with Yumper and Swo, those guys. It's been a great time with the Tainted Glove Network as we've expanded from just being, you know, just me and Pete just shooting the shit on a summer night drunk between, you know, my other podcast, the Pinwheels and Ivy podcast, and then the 108 that started as the nickname. Let's give you a little bit of history. I mean, let's talk about how this really came to be. And then we're going to go over some of the top moments of the show, some of our favorite moments of the year. And again, we'll talk a little bit of baseball in the middle too. So we'll talk about the White Sox 6-game heater, and we'll talk about the Cubs degradation, I guess we'll call it a little bit for a second. But you know, the little story of the show, if those of you that have never heard this story, it's kind of a funny story. We started in the summer. Again, I'm a part of another podcast, the Pinwheels and Ivy podcast. I've been on that podcast for almost 4 years, 3.5 years now at this point, with Aldo Soto and my man Southside Zoe, Father Zoe, Pope Zoe. There's so many different Zoes. He's like got his own multiverse, basically. And so during the shutdown, obviously I wasn't in school, so I was working from home, and it was during the summer, so obviously there is no school. But it was during the pandemic and the shutdown, and so I think everybody can agree that we were all drinking a little bit more than we normally do in normal circumstances. Maybe not, maybe we do, but I know that I was. And so between the Tainted Glove, between the Pinwheels and Ivy podcast, and between the 108, at one point we were all on Thursday nights, and so it was like a, you know, we were like the warm up act before, you know, Chappelle goes on stage. So we were like Rob Schneider at an Adam Sandler you know, stand up show. We got to be the opener. We were like the cold open, and so we would, you know, we do the Pinwheels and Ivy, but I would be drinking on the Pinwheels and Ivy. And I those of you that have watched the Pinwheels and Ivy or listened to it, or maybe even the show a few times, on occasion I might have a little bit too much of Grandpa's old cough medicine. And this is water though. So the in between, we wanted to keep talking. So me and Pete hopped on and we'd have people on. Like, it was really more like a Zoom in between. And then when the 108 would start, we'd pop over and just join that chat and start having some fun. But it got to be pretty entertaining. I mean, me and Pete had a good time talking. We would have Beer Garden Jim, Bruhan Luke, Alex Rude. I mean, some of the guys would just pop on there. Yumper would pop on there on occasion. And, you know, Willie P. Some of the dudes from White Sox Twitter, especially. We'd just get on there and just shenanigans. And I want to say it was suggested that, I think Alex Rude suggested, why don't you guys start recording this? It's great. It's good stuff. And so we went, oh, let's give it a shot. And so from there, Lauren Wills actually gave us the nickname, because I called it the Taint, because it taint in the front, it taint in the back. And then, you know, it became the Golden Taint. And finally, Lauren Wills, L. Wills, and all of her, you know, fantastic creative ideas, she said, why don't you call it the Tainted Glove? And so, boom, start thinking about that song, Tainted Glove, I want to, or if you're the Coneheads version, go away with the Antichrist. But came up with that title. And so we started to put into the ideas of what we wanted to create. And a year ago, May 3rd, we actually, you know, today's May 9th. So a year ago plus six, we recorded our first podcast and it was great. We started learning a lot about our technology, breathing. It's very different going through StreamYard as opposed to going through the soundboard. We weren't live. So if you listen to our first episode, one of my favorite parts about it is it sounds like one of those creepy dudes that call you late at night, huffing and puffing on the phone, because all of our breaths were completely broadcast, like loud. We couldn't figure out the settings. I wasn't sure if it was my soundboard or if it was going straight into it, because we were recording directly into it. He didn't have, you know, was he using the mic? But our breaths were like almost sexual in nature. We figured that out. Great first time episode. And you know, when we introduced ourselves, it was a great time. You know, and again, we started out with the, I believe we talked about the Bears draft. And then we talked about toxicity in media and the, you know, Cubs and White Sox banner, because he's a Sox fan, I'm a Cub fan. And it just, you know, it blossomed into what it is. And, you know, Pete's such a great man. And if you guys have had any time talking to him, you could sit and talk with Pete. And it's like you're old friends and you've known each other for decades. And when Pete and I get on here, you know, I mean, what you guys see is usually the recording of it all. But there's the 30 minutes before and there's the 30 minutes after where we're just sitting there just talking, because it's two old friends, not even old friends, new friends that are old that are talking sports. So we've had a real guest, kind of the story of the Tainted Glove. And fast forward, about 6-7 months after that, Yumper and Swo, great dudes. We started talking film. Those guys wanted to kick off and do a film show. So we launched our second Tainted Glove Network podcast, which is Yumper and Swo at the Show, which you can see and check them out on Spotify and on OnlyFans. and so then that launched, you know, from there. So they started to do their podcast, and then we built a website. So if you go to thetaintedglove.com, now we have a website where not only are we putting our broadcasts, but we also write our blogs on occasion. Get out that writing. I'm a former sports writer and film critic. So for me, it's exciting to just write in a manner that's no pressure. I don't have to like feel like I have to write something, but I can write something. And it's become very organic. And so you've got Swo doing his weekly standings with his hats. You know, you got music reviews. Pete does his Collector's Corner, which has been fantastic. If you haven't seen it, a week ago today, he did a new Collector's Corner. He's getting, you know, contact from Baseball Hall of Fame, even. It's become this organic, you know, the four of us. And we're always looking for other podcasts that would like to join our network. We've got a couple dudes that we've reached out to as a joke, but kind of serious. Like, you know, are you happy where you're at? You know? And so Dave Kaplan said he'll be joining. No, just kidding. Just kidding. Nope, I will walk off. That's kind of where we're sitting at. So it's been a fun ride, and we appreciate those of you that have been a part of it from the beginning. So, you know, if we had some confetti, we blow the confetti up and laugh about it and say thanks for tuning in. Because again, it's been a whole year. I mean, you know, they say a business usually fails in the first year. So if we're still around after a year, we've done something right. It's not really a business. We don't get paid for it, but, it's a passion project and we enjoy this. Whoa, there, my lighting just got better. We enjoy this. And so Pete, again, he's at the game today. So we're going to go over some of our favorite moments of the first season of the Tainted Glove. Whether we talk about when we had Josh Rawich, the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame, on, whether it's Yeah Dog and his NASCAR, special episode where his microphone couldn't work. The White Sox clincher last year, the John Turturro cursing episode. You know, talking about the crosstown episode last year in August when the Cubs played the White Sox. You know, the Vegas trip, two different Vegas trips, the Bears game that Pete came out for, and then the regular trip a couple months ago where him and Wally Money and Yumper and Swo and Nam and the Noms, Queen and King Nam, Bruhan Luke, everyone kind of popped out here to Vegas, and we had ourselves a a doozy of a time, I guess we'll say. So a lot of stuff in there. And obviously we're still going to talk some Cubs baseball and stuff, but it's been a really, it's been a great year. And so my first favorite moment, honestly, of this podcast is one of the first discussions that we had. So I'm going to kind of try my best to scroll through these things and not totally, you know, I hopefully they're queued up close enough, but this is the first Tainted Glove. And this is our inaugural episode where, again, Pete starts his tirade, his first little tirade.
Bears fan, White Sox, Bears, Blackhawks, Bulls. I was a bandwagon Bulls fan, to be honest with you. So the Jordan years, I was a Bulls fan, and after that, lost touch with it. So excited to be here. We'll see how this goes.
All right. And yeah, and so that was Pete just giving his little rundown. And as you get into the episode, the first episode, we talked about the Bears draft, the Justin Fields, to be exact. And so Justin Fields being a Bear.
Thomas Graham, who actually sat out.
Oh, fantastic show. Showtime, I believe.
Oh, the total random
that's not thing. So see, I'm going to queue up a little
69
bit.
69 or 70. It's the trial of the gentleman who were
Excalibur. Yeah. Oh, go down below.
Fobbled. It's a double play.
Correct.
Ninth inning. Generous.
That's pretty generous. You get the negative stress and you're like, oh my God, I'm stressed.
Okay. So I'm gonna have to go back through there to find those. But first episode, I thought I had it queued up, but I guess what I'm gonna have to do is go through the YouTube page. I don't know, it's not on YouTube, so I might have overshot this as far as like having everything queued up, having the time code. But I guess the big moment in that first one we talked about the Oscars, we talked about a great deal of that was kind of a bland get to know you episode, but here is the big one. It's Tony La Russa. And again, let's give you a quick aloha. It's pretty clear that Pete has some feelings and we got right into it.
The Tainted Glove. Thank you guys. Sorry about that. But we're talking White Sox baseball in general. It's pinky nail black.
People handled and everything else, having Hendricks be the runner on third base and everything else as a result of the double switch and all that. But you... the team's in first place, for God's sakes. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, they're in first place in spite of him. No, because if that were the case, they would have finished in first place last year in spite of Ricky Renteria. So some people just, no matter what Tony does, they're going to have a bug up their ass about him, no matter what, because he's not the guy they wanted. They wanted a guy who cheated. And I said this last week and I'll say it again. If you think AJ Hinch had a shot to manage this team, you don't understand this organization at all. And for the people who talk about, and I quote, the owner overstepping the GM to hire Tony La Russa, look at an org chart. The owner generally is the guy on the top. If he's the guy who signs the paychecks, he generally gets last say on anything and everything that's done. He's the owner. The GM works for the owner, not the other way around.
You guys remember that?
Last time I checked.
So that's Pete going on the first take. Now, this is a very special episode. This is episode 2. And the reason why it's special is if you look at the time code on Spotify, you will see that this is only a 30-minute episode. And if you've listened to us before, you know that our episodes usually go pretty... I mean, we're like old dudes. We go like an hour and a half. Sometimes we've gone into 2 hours. But this one, for some reason, is 30 minutes. So I'm going to tell you guys a little secret. It's because we recorded it, and it was on a Sunday night, and I didn't have school on Monday, and I was hammer drunk by the time the thing was over. Hammer drunk, like bad. So I'm going to fast forward. You can hear my voice a little bit at the beginning.
Pete, do you remember that time that the McDonald's franchise in Sacramento decided that they were going to serve not Big Macs and some random ass burger because they...
Okay, so that's normal voice. But now let's get here.
League baseball should reach out and like plug into Greg Maddux's brain and then just process what Greg feels about the game of baseball. And let that be the real truth.
That's funny. It's funny you say.
You can hear me slurring bad. So episode 2 was a definitely a mulligan. That was kind of like my warning. And I think the only other time that I really got that trashy trashed was probably when we went on Yumper and Swole for the Oscars. And again, Sunday night, no school. What the hell am I going to do, right? So that was a funny one, only because an episode that we recorded that was about an hour and a half long had to be trimmed down to an half hour because of the vodka sodas that went down like water. So that was a very interesting second episode. I thought Pete was like, fuck this, I'm done. But we carried on. I don't think he even asked me, like, why is the episode so short? And I just cut it. Our second episode was us talking about these guys, you know, when Pete was coming to Vegas. And that was when they announced that the Bears were coming to Vegas. They added that 17th game. We did a Black Keys review, which was great. And we talked about the Fall Festival lineup. And so with that episode, that was a real fun one. We have a few Vegas episodes, but that was kind of a pre thing. And then something happened in early June. I came out to Chicago and I got to go to observe and watch a game in the 108 with the White Sox, with the rest of the 108 fans and Pete and Yumper and Zoe, Southside Zoe, and the whole gang. It was really like a gigantic family reunion of people that had never really hung out in the same place together. And that was pretty awesome. And so we talked about Aloha Style Wings because when we went to, it was my first White Sox game since 97. And we did. We had a good day. We went to Buffalo Wings and Rings beforehand and ate some delicious wings. Episode 2 was a blast. Episode 3, excuse me. That was episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 at that point. And so then we moved on into the summer after that trip, and it was a fantastic time. But the sticky stuff happened. The bad hobby bass running happened. Ex-wife walk-up music happened, talking about the Juliana Zobrist affair that had come to light that week. So we jumped into that as well. We talked about, and the next week we talked about No Tippin' Pippin. And Trevor Bauer's Sunday Night Baseball interview about sticky stuff, which Pete was actually in agreement with some of the stuff that he said. And then we moved into the pre-MLB draft episode. And this was a big one because this is when we were still talking about who might be who. And in fact, I believe in this podcast, I actually bring up Montgomery as a guy that I really hoped the Cubs targeted. And look who got him. The White Sox got him. So. That was a blast of an episode. Church of Jake was canceled. We were excommunicated. That was when Jake Arrieta was basically done with the White Sox. Once the MLB draft hit, Eloy Jimenez Day, we joked that was the trade day in the anniversary of the Eloy Jimenez trade. But so as we kind of do that, you know, we moved into the summer, into the July, and we hit the trade deadline, and that was a tough one. So I'm going to skip over the trade deadline because I have a... yes, well, there is one episode where we reviewed the episode where Scott Bakula on Quantum Leap was special needs. One of many great episodes of that show, by the way, which needs to be brought back. They need to bring back Quantum Leap. I'll die on that hill all day long. But as we kind of went through our season into August, you know, our August 1st episode, we talked about who's the most hated owner in Chicago, and I think that we really argued about that quite a bit. And then Aloha talked about his experience at the Field of Dreams episode. So let's kind of see if I can cue up a little Field of Dreams.
If someone wants to roast
you, he said, and his mom was a... So I think this is about where he goes, talks about the trip. So let's go, and we're going to cut to Pete and his experience at the Field of Dreams game.
How did everybody, what was the crowd like after the, of course, the resolution?
It was Mardi Gras, New Year's Eve, 12:01 a.m. Crazy. It was insane. It was almost like a drug induced aphrodisiac. And I wouldn't be surprised 9 months from now, there's an expansion in White Sox fan baby births
named Spaghetti.
Yes.
Which baby's named Spaghetti
or named Tim Anderson.
Yeah. Tim Anderson. And like all these names, the middle name and everything. So yeah.
Tim Anderson, you know, McCluskey or something. McCluskey.
he's a beat caps kid. His real name is Tim Anderson McCluskey.
All that gibberish, that word salad that you heard there. Pete does get into his experience at the Field of Dreams game. We talk about the many states of Newark on that episode as well. And The Green Knight, which I thought was a great film about the Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. So real quick, you know, that's in August. And we did obviously the Crosstown Glen. The John Turturro cursing game episode was fantastic. That's why I was looking at the wrong one. Nah, that's why. Here's the experience we want to get into.
That's who it is. Comes first.
Is the strength that you have that abilities are about explosion. Get around in a circle in the street.
Well, it's also like going to Alcatraz and seeing the cells in Alcatraz.
And line to the microphone.
Turn around and look, and then walk a little more and repeat the same thing. So
here he is.
We thought he might be loaded, but it was obviously to build the heighten the drama and build the drama for the players walking out of the corn, which I'm sure it looked awesome on TV, but it was 100 times better seeing it in person. And the funny thing is, I think Aaron Judge was the size of a stalk of corn.
he was oak tree, man. He was so huge. I mean, and it was, you know, and it was, sadly enough, Tony La Russa wasn't there. He was his brother-in-law, I believe, passed away. So he was away for a funeral, which, you know, obviously condolences on there. So Miguel Cairo was out the front part. And I couldn't help but think, because I didn't know anything about what was going on with La Russa. Seeing Cairo out there, I'm like, Lucia can't even come out of the dugout? Like, he's seriously, like, he might be worried that, like, the ghost of Ty Cobb's going to pop out of the corn and be like, hey, bro. I'm like, oh, because they knew each other probably. And, like, every, you know, Shoeless Joe and those guys start popping out. But the uniforms were just sick. You know,
spot.
Incredible.
Spot on. I mean, obviously, there's only one thing about the uniform that doesn't ring true. And that is they did not have numbers on those uniforms back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing they did to make it, to modernize it, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, probably better fabrics too.
Yeah, it's not cotton. It's not cotton.
Right. It's not all wool. It's
breathable. Yeah, cotton and wool.
If they sweat in them,
you know, down here, nasty when you're done too.
But why isn't he here?
So Aloha got to go experience that. And he had a great time. But I can't seem to find it on the queue up. But there was this, I played this video of the Nick Turturro Yankees fan after the home run that he hit, or that was hit in the, that he went after the home run by Tim Anderson, because the Yankees took the lead and he just went on, let's see if I can find it. God, I hope I have it. I don't. How come nobody's? I guess I have. You know what? I do have it. I think I have it on my my phone instead. So we'll go to the tape. We're gonna check the tape. I could cue this thing up. So I'm gonna go back a little bit.
Woo! Yeah, baby! What a comeback! Yeah! Oh yeah, baby! He was fucking due. Let's win this fucking game! Yeah!
A few moments later.
Fucking times could it happen this year? How many fucking times could they lose like that? How many fucking times after coming back? God, this is just a fucking killer of a year that has been horrible.
Hilarious stuff. But he went nuts. And so we watched that show, or we watched the Nick Turturro lost their mind a little bit, but that was a great episode. So if you get a chance to see that one, Pete relaying all the experiences that he had on the at the game, which is great, because again, he talks about how he went to into the cornfield and he walked from walked the site where they filmed the film, and again, how that film itself just has a great deal of meaning for a lot of us our age group. So then we went into the Aloha NASCAR. It started our first little tiff with our guy Deshaun. Yadog was very upset that Pete thinks that NASCAR is only left turn. So that is a seed that was planted on that episode that eventually would turn into an entire episode dedicated to NASCAR and Yadog, who does leave us a voicemail for before and after each of these podcasts, which you've probably heard already at this point. Then we got into August, late August, and that's when, after the trade deadline, Javi Baez. We talked about Javi Baez and insulting the fans with his hand gesture that was basically a middle finger, and that he was very clear about that. And then we talk about Patrick Wisdom in the next episode, September 13th episode. Pete actually tells us that Patrick Wisdom will be a flop as a major league hitter and as an everyday player, which I think I don't disagree with him. And I think he's at the point where he's probably pretty correct. Moving into the fall, obviously the Matt Nagy Don't Be You episode was a great one because we talked about Jose potential, the Jose Abreu slide that people thought might be dirty. We talked about the Sopranos, Dear Evan Hansen, and the debacle for the Bears in Cleveland. And from that episode, the it really became a little bit more bull set or bear centric because the White Sox got eliminated not too long after. And then, of course, the Bears game here in Las Vegas in October. That was great. Post-Bears-Packers weekend where we had a blast with Pete and I here in Vegas along with Wally Money. And at this point, one thing happened, though, is when we started talking about an experience that I had as a young high schooler. And so this was kind of an interesting story for me. But a lot of people don't know, but I did have the worst date of all time at one point when I was in high school. And so I'm going to go ahead and share this real quick. But this was a clip. We started talking about the worst dates. And this here is actually me retelling the story about my worst date ever. To a Steven Spielberg film actually. So here you go. So this is obviously before the internet. This is obviously but Jurassic Park had come out earlier in the year, and the new Spielberg film was coming out around the holidays, around the winter time, I believe it was, and late in the year. And I had this crush on this girl. She was a sophomore. Her name was Lisa Brown. She's gorgeous, really was gorgeous. I was like, oh, you know, I was a junior, so I was cool. You know, I was cooler. So I asked her out and then said, yeah, sure. So we went out on a date. Took her to Maggiano's at One Schaumburg Place. It was great.
Streets of Woodfield, baby.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. And so we went there and we had some dinner. And again, I'm thinking, it's just a Spielberg. It was like a blanket. Like, it's a Spielberg film. Like, always just go. And so, you know, the date was going well. You know, we had a good rapport. And, you know, we knew each other from school, obviously. But it was looking good. It was looking good. And so we get to the theater and we sit down, you know. Lights go down and the movie starts. And
starts in black and white, or starts in color, then goes to black and white.
Schindler's List is the movie. Yep. Schindler's List. Yep. Holocaust date night. And so we go on this movie. It's like 3 hours long. And it's torturous and traumatic and powerful and gut-wrenching and just, you know, I mean, it's kicks in the nards over and over on repeat. And movie's over. The end credit scene, which is, you know, it's they're going to place the rocks or the stones on the grave, mm-hmm. and to honor, you know, the original people that actually were at the camp and that were saved by Oscar Schindler. And it's just, again, there's no talking. And so finally, you know, we basically sat there in the seats and the lights come up and it's stand up, leave the theater, not a word, get in the car, not a word, drive her to her house. Not a word. Walk her to her door. Not a word. Neither of us could say a damn thing. Needless to say, Heather, or me and Lisa never went on a date again, but I did go out with Heather Brown when we watched Candyman and Made Out. So I guess everything kind of transitions towards Heather Brown and heavy petting, so I guess we're fine there. But yeah, that was a worst date night ever. You cannot just choose a worse date moment than that. So that was... Whoo! Yeah, I shot my shot, I guess, and... Well... It ended up at Auschwitz. So yeah, that happened. So here is a picture of young K Fids. If you were wondering, that's actually around the time. Actually, about 2 months after this picture was taken, that's my really good friend Michelle, my high school crush, actually, who became the Rose Queen actually when she was a senior, and then we dated for a little bit when I was at 30. But there's me. There's K-Fids. There's a young pup K-Fids that just months later would be completely ruined by that horrible experience with Schindler's List. A great film, not a date movie. So that was a great moment in the show's history as well. So real quick, we're going to take a pause in all of this because it is we are a Cubs, you know, and White Sox show. So real quick, we can talk a little bit about the White Sox, and I got a couple people in the chat, which is awesome. I appreciate you guys jumping on here as well. But the White Sox right now are actually on the tail end of a 6-game heater. After an 8-game losing streak, the White Sox have now won 6 in a row. So it went from doomsday White Sox fans always take struggles. Chicago sports fans in general don't overreact ever, actually. It never happens. And so, you know, 10 days ago, the White Sox season was over. Today, they are now above 500, I believe. And this is they're on a heater right now. So they're off today. Oh, no, they're not off today. That's where Pete's at. Pete's at the game. They have, the Guardians today at Guaranteed Rate Field. So Pete will be there, and that game starts in, an hour and hour and a half. So right now, Pete's probably on his way down there. I'm sure there's some 108s in Lot B going on right now. And so tonight's matchup is Kopech versus Plesac. But the White Sox are on a heater right now, and it's been an interesting stretch. And White Sox fans really have kind of gutted through some tough times. But I mean, if you look at the baseball they've played, yeah, it does help that there's, you know, and we said it on the podcast 2 weeks ago when the White Sox had that 5-run ninth inning against the Angels, even though they lost 6-5 or whatever it was, they did finish strong. And those are things to build off of. And we said it on the podcast that day when we were recording that, you know, I said that the White Sox are going to go 7-2 in their next nine from that Angels game all the way through the Cleveland series. And you know, that was something that we were really talking about, how like it's going to get better and a team's going to start slow sometimes. You know, you're afforded with talent, you're afforded the right to struggle a little bit because talent is going to eventually rise to the top. And since that day, the White Sox are 6-0. So I think that I'm pretty close to hitting that. If they even win tonight, they at least clinch me being correct on that assumption. But since that game, it has been a really interesting cross section of heroes in all of this. And you know, whether it was Larry Garcia, the struggles that he had early, but he's had some pretty decently important knocks. The constant consistency of Tim Anderson and the fact that Tim Anderson got suspended again for flipping off fans always cracks me up. I mean, but something that, you know, Javi Baez does the same thing and doesn't get a suspension at all. In fact, Amir Garrett gets suspended for something Javi did. So it was kind of an interesting little microcosm of how baseball punishes people. But when you look at the White Sox schedule over the last, since that Anaheim comeback where they fell short, they beat Anaheim in the series finale, and then they had a get-right series with the Cubs. Now, they weren't scoring a ton of runs at this point. They still haven't been pouring it on. In fact, in spite of the lack of offensive production, and I think it's because this, you know, the White Sox lineup is a little bit in flux. You know, they beat the Angels 3-0. They beat the Cubs 3-1. They beat the Cubs 4-3. They beat the Red Sox 4-2. The Red Sox 3-1. Red Sox 3-2. They haven't put up five runs since the loss to the Angels in that ninth inning. But the pitching staff and that bullpen, and unsung heroes too, that the non-superstar or non-high paycheck relievers have really been getting it done, especially Foster looked fantastic the other day. And the White Sox have been able to grind out a six-game winning streak. This is with the offense struggling. Now, they're getting back. Yoan Moncada today. Andrew Vaughn had a really good day today. His swollen hand wrist is almost back to 100%. He'll be jumping back here really soon. Joe Kelly is returning to the lineup for the White Sox as well. You have quite a bit of positivity coming in here for the White Sox as they head into this three-game divisional series, which is, you know, say what you want, this is a game that matters more than the Cubs series. This is the Guardians. And this is a divisional team that is hanging around just a game below, you know, half a game back in the standings. The White Sox are three games out. The White Sox play their game, and they open up the offense, and it's getting warmer in Chicago. Guys are seeing more pitches. You've started to see a more disciplined White Sox team. They're taking walks now. They're not chasing out of the zone as much. In other words, they're finally getting to where they would have been if they would have had a full spring training and not a lockout. Weather's heating up. Maybe the humidor is broken. Whatever it is, I think the White Sox are going to go into this series, and I think the White Sox are going to put up some big numbers. I really do anticipate today the White Sox really, really opening it up in this game. So we'll see what happens today, but it is against Plesac. This is a perfect opportunity for the White Sox to really open something up, just because, obviously, this White Sox team needs to. And so they got Kopech on the bump. Kopech's been good. Plesac, everyone likes to hit that dude around just because. So I expect the White Sox to start putting up some numbers. And they've got a good matchup tomorrow as well. They've got Quantrill. Quantrill's not, you know, some juggernaut. And then, you know, that's the Geo game. And then you've got Savali on Wednesday. And at that point, you know, this is White Sox could win three in a row. And the Twins, on the other hand, are going to be locked in with the Astros. I mean, the Twins could very well lose three games in a row, and the White Sox could win three more games in a row and be in first place before this, you know, when this Cleveland series ends. So You know, there's been a lot of different contributors, but if you look at each of these games, timely hitting has been a big thing for the White Sox. They've left a few guys on base, but I think the biggest, you know, and I guess the most recent win, Dallas Keuchel went out and pitched like Dallas Keuchel, old Dallas Keuchel. Two earned runs, eight hits, five Ks, and what? I throw like seven innings, shutout, or you know, he gave up six innings, eight hits, two earned runs, one walk, wonderful, and five strikeouts. He lowered his ERA a ton just with that kind of an outing. And then you got Burr, Foster, and then you had Tony La Russa with a beat up, tired bullpen. I know that people wanted Graveman, but apparently, I'm not sure if it was the bummer injury that maybe changed his approach because he wanted to have better arms available for today against the Guardians for this series, one of the more rested. Whatever it is, he audibled. He started Ruiz, who did fine, but then gave up a double. And then they brought in Sosa in for the one out save, and it worked. People were still upset that they didn't use Graveman, and that's fine. But, you know, you don't want to get caught on results. But I think that in this situation, the process was just as sound as the results. So with Tony La Russa, he managed a game like a Hall of Fame manager does in that case. Still got criticism. That's fine. That's going to happen every time. It doesn't matter what he's going to do. People are going to be – he's a lightning bolt. So he's a lightning rod, and it's just going to keep happening. But I thought that was a great – you know, offensively, when you look at that box score – you know, and you're starting to see again, Tim Anderson is doing what Tim Anderson does. Although he didn't play that game, you had a multi-hit from Grandal. You had, you know, Abreu driving in runs, doing what he normally does. And so that's a good thing for the White Sox when you see those guys starting to produce. And, you know, when you go into Boston and you take a three-game set at Fenway, that's not an easy place to play. I know the Boston's kind of cheeks right now, but you do have to win on the road, and that's a fan base and a crowd that is into the game. Doesn't matter what the record is. They're Boston. We're from Boston. They're loud. They're going to get into it. They're going to sing Sweet Caroline, and then they're going to go after you. So I thought that was a really impressive three-game grind for the White Sox, and I think that these are the things especially that you have to look at as the season goes on because, yes, I know you can't win a pennant in April. But with the postseason as it is, I'm actually less concerned. And I think the White Sox, I've said it here a million times, White Sox, by the time it's over, the cream's going to rise to the top, and the White Sox are going to be going to win the division and finish in first. So this is going to be a series, though. Watch this series tonight. You know, more than anything, like I said, tonight's, you know, big matchup. You're going to see Kopech go out there. Plesak's just struggling. And I think this is one of those games where if the White Sox can just jump on them fast, early, White Sox fans at Guaranteed Rate are going to get excited. I don't know what the numbers are going to be at attendance-wise tonight. It's a weeknight, but it is a Monday. So we'll see how that kind of plays out too. But the crowd needs to be into this tonight for the White Sox. And I think that the energy last time they started a homestand was extremely different. This one, a lot more energy. So the White Sox are in a good place right now. Don't want to shake it. Don't want to jinx it. But we'll see where they go from here. Cubs, on the other hand, are in a very different place as well. After playing okay in the first series, you know, Cubs fans knee-jerk reaction telling us to be patient, but then we're also going to win the whole thing. The Cubs have now lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a row. The Cubs are sitting at 9-17, I believe, now at this point. They've lost, they're 2-8 in their last 10, lost 5 in a row. They're 9-18. If you take away the Pittsburgh Pirates 21-0 win that they had, they are a 41-run differential with their opponents because they're at 20 right now, but that 21 really does help. They scored three touchdowns and outscored a Matt Nagy offense against the Pirates, and then things have really fallen apart since. And, you know, they beat the Brewers. They've lost every series since the opening series. The Cubs are just not in a great place. Seiya Suzuki has cooled down. I think he's got three hits in his last, like, 35 at-bats. Frank Schwindel was sent down yesterday, but was called up today because of an injury to somebody. That poor guy is getting jerked around now. And you've got, you know, again, this is a baseball team. The Cubs are a baseball team that relied on 29-year-old career minor leaguers, in Frank Schwindel and Patrick Wisdom, having to rely on a guy that's coming over from Japan that's never played in the American game and has some adjustments to make. A pitching staff that is incomplete and full of projects, or consistently inconsistent four or five ERA guys. The Cubs offense has scored, I believe they scored 21 runs in their last, the last 11 games, I believe it was. It is the number right now that they're sitting at. So they're just not doing anything right now offensively. And so it's obviously becoming a little bit of an issue for Cub fans, but you know, it is what it is, right? Stroman went to the COVID list. And Patrick Wisdom is now out at least for a couple games. He's got a boo-boo. He's got a bruise on his foot. He fouled the ball off trying to turn on a slider outer half and rolled it onto his foot instead. Maybe go the other way and it won't happen, but still. So that's where the Cubs are kind of sitting at right now. But minor leagues, you know, we're back to this point, you know, and I'm sure Yumper, who's in the chat, will agree. We thought we were over having to kind of bear with a bad major league team and pay attention to the pups on the farm at this point. But right now, this is where we're at. A lot of pups on the farm. Christian Hernandez today hit an absolute 450-foot bomb in extended spring training. You've got, you know, Brennan Davis is a little cold right now at AAA, but he's going to adjust and get better. You got a lot of prospects. The thing is, though, with fans, and we'll have to really say this, when the Cubs sold Javi, KB, Rizzo last year, they were selling sure things. They were selling what you can expect as a consistent production. There is now zero. I think Seiya is probably the closest to a sure thing that they have in that roster now. And that's not a sure thing either. And now everybody's going to have to rely on rookies and prospects. And prospects have a 5% chance of panning out. You got Nick Madrigal trying to figure it out. Again, adjusting. And you know, really, if you know Nick Madrigal, doing the things that he's not really known for doing. He's really changed his approach right now. So I think that there's a little bit of a push to try and be better, be something that he's not. And that'll eventually fill in as well. But got to worry about, you know, so we're sitting here, we're thinking about prospects. And so it's cool. It's exciting. Prospects are like daydreaming. It's like saying that, you know, I'd love to date Kate Beckinsale one day. Yeah, you might. There's a chance. I mean, there's a chance for anything, right? But most of those players are not going to pan out. We're looking at Brennan Davis right now, who is as sure a thing as a prospect as there is. He's struggling at AAA right now. He's not doing well at AAA. And it goes to show that this game's kind of hard. And so we might puff up our minor leaguers and say these prospects are so good, but this is one of the top prospects in baseball. He's hitting 195 at the AAA level. Not great. Not great at all. He's the number one prospect in the Cubs system. So this is obviously an issue that the Cubs are going to have to deal with, but fans need to temper their expectations for these poor prospects, because it's the Cubs, the Rizzo, KB, Javi, Schwarber, Willie, that's not normal. That kind of a success is not normal. Especially that like tight of a success of draft and draft and draft and draft and then it all working out and picking up a guy, you know, from San Diego that they kind of slightly gave up on. That is not normal. And Cub fans apparently think that that's normal. They haven't been paying attention the other 108 years before all that happened. It's not easy. Prospects are prospects. They're prospects until they're good pros. And a first round draft pick, if they turn into an average major leaguer, is a success story. So you've got to take that into consideration. So Cub fans are looking to the future, you know, wait till next year is back. this Cub team is, you know, Kyle Hendricks is pitching tonight. He doesn't look anything like Kyle Hendricks, but we're at this point, and I hate to say this, but the Cubs are sitting at 9-18, and they're playing at San Diego tonight. If they get swept in this series, that'll put them at 9-21. I don't think that there's going to be much of a wait before the Cubs start selling pieces. I know that it's not entirely put you out, and I know this was a tough stretch dating back to the Devil Rays or the Tampa Bay Rays series, but it does make a difference. And so this there's going to be a little rough stretch, and Cub fans need to prepare themselves for what's coming. I don't think, and maybe you guys in the chat can agree or disagree with me as well, but I don't think Wilson Contreras is going to be with the Cubs very much longer. I don't think that Kyle Hendricks is going to be with the Cubs much longer, although his poor performance might affect his trade value. I think that we're about to start seeing bullpen pieces go. I don't think the Cubs are going to wait until July to start making these moves. And I think we're going to have a longer, more painful summer for Cub fans, because we're going to lose, you know, Wilson Contreras isn't playing that great right now. Let's not pretend like he's running hot. You know, he's hitting, you know, I think 240, and he's, you know, not driving in a ton of runs. I mean, nobody is at this point. But he is a valuable catcher defensively as well. You're going to see him go pretty fast. We've said it on here too. I am not going to be shocked if Marcus Stroman is flipped. And yeah, we were told this is a retool, not a rebuild, but boy, the ESPN broadcast last night against the Dodgers, they sure said rebuild about 1,000. If it was a drinking game, I'd have been as drunk as I was in that episode with Pete that we had to cut from 2 hours down to 30 minutes. So it is, and so you've got all these, you've got these guys that are going to be gone. So, you know, you look at players that have performed and Smiley might be traded. You know, I'm not going to be shocked if Marcus Stroman is dealt. He's a 3-year contract, and this feels like a 3 years before the Cubs are even potentially competing with this roster. Seiya Suzuki can't carry the load. Ian Happ is fine. He's okay. Ian Happ might be traded. He's got a couple years of team control and arbitration that he might be a deal for somebody, especially as a switch hitter guy from both sides of the plate. I don't know. But I do know that the Jed Hoyer, if those guys are willing to sell their big three as easily as they did, no shock here. But I think it'll happen earlier than later. I think teams are going to want to get on this jump. There are some teams in Major League Baseball right now that are fringe, especially with the new expanded playoff system. You know, six teams instead of in each league instead of four. So you're going to start seeing some moves maybe a little bit prematurely. And I think the Cubs, if they're smart, they're going to go ahead and not wait for desperation because they might get burned on that. Some teams might not just feel the need. So someone has a need now, early, you strike. And so I'm not going to be shocked if you see, there was a tweet from one of the Cubs accounts that is a pretty good account. I'm not going to name that account, but I have the screenshot. It's a deleted tweet now. But that deleted tweet, and I'm going to quote this deleted tweet so that you kind of can get a feel for what may be coming for the Cubs, for Cub fans, and for really the roster movement coming out of the Cubs front office. And this is a little troublesome, but at the same time, it's probably not untrue. And so this account, which again is one of the more respected Cubs accounts, especially when it comes to the organization and the farm system, says, was talking to someone a few weeks ago, and in looking at the Cubs' current roster, it wouldn't surprise me if 12 to 14 of them weren't in the organization come opening day 2023. This tweet has been deleted. This is an account that knows, and this is key to me. If you look at that all by itself, 12 to 13, they have 26 dudes on the roster right now. Seiya Suzuki's probably untouchable. I'm going to say that he's an untouch. But then you start looking at who isn't? Well, everybody should be on the table. Obviously, if there's a good offer for Seiya, they should take it probably. But he's a 5-year deal. I think that he's the entertainment. He's the ticket seller. But you've got Wisdom. You know, you've got Hap. You've got, I mean, Jason Hayward's probably not going anywhere because he's going to block every trade because why wouldn't he? He's getting paid $24 million to do absolutely nothing. Seiya has a no trade clause, which I'm glad they gave him. And so he gets to decide if he wants to stick or go. So he's not going anywhere. But then everybody else, I mean, you look at that roster top to bottom, and you know, I think that there's some of them aren't really much to sell in the first place, but depth moves. But I think that you could get a Stroman deal. I think a Stroman deal would be a lot more valuable than a Smiley deal, but who knows? So that's stuff that's coming down the line. So that, you know, it's a little bit depressing talking about the Cubs, but had to kind of throw that in there a little bit just to make sure that we're talking about stuff. And so let's get back to some of the better, some reminiscence of the first season of the Tainted Glove. In November, the post-Packers weekend was fun. And they lost to the Packers again. The humiliating loss at Tampa Bay for the Bears. We got a little bit more into that. Then the Rocky and Drago episode I thought was great. And that was when we talked about how I was very disappointed they didn't have the robot in this Rocky IV remake. But then we did the Hall of Fame episode, which was a two-part episode. We talked about the Hall of Fame inductions and voting, and then jumped to Bruce Springsteen, Ghostbusters, Afterlife, and it was a Thanksgiving special, so we got a lot of turkey. Two-part specials, a lot of stuffing. So part one and part two, that's a good one to check out. Came out November 23rd. The CBA deadline, Twitter meltdowns, and then that Beatles documentary was a great episode on November 30th. And then the Nagy's final Packers loss, West Side Story, and then Len Casper's band. And then we talked about our favorite sports moments of 2021, and then the Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy firing episode, which was great. So the big one, I think, for us was the NASCAR episode was great when we had Yadog on. And so I'm going to see if I can't find a clip of Yadog
so you get like a Martinsville.
When snow falls in Texas or Nevada or places like that, or the wind shifts on Lakeshore Drive and all those cars get stranded.
This has been, yeah, dog guy lost his
signal. Or
gotten the current car I own, I've actually gotten up to like 100 a day.
That's not branding. What do they call it? Mark up. Convenient.
What races would you recommend watching?
Well, the Daytona 500 obviously is, well, for these guys, it's the Super Bowl. They start their season off with like the Super Bowl. So like if that they never do anything the rest of their lives, right? And if you win the Daytona 500, you are guaranteed like deodorant commercials, like, you know, beer commercials, like you're going to be on all the talk shows, you know. So like you, like at least if you never win a championship or if you never win, anytime they introduce you, they're going to say the Daytona 500 champion. They're going to say that. So like, you know, all these guys like that horrible Kyle Busch guy, that's the only race he hasn't won. And that's why, you know, there's probably big bets on him this weekend because he's digging hard to try to get this. But it all depends on the racetrack and the race day. So we'll see.
So that was Yeah Dog popping on there for a little bit. And he had some technical difficulties. So we had some fun with him. We started speaking for him and doing some Yeah Dog stuff. But we followed that up in March with the band shift episode and the CBA changes while we were still on strike. So we were kind of trying to figure out some stuff. And then the big one came on March 14th. And it was a very special episode. We were able to welcome the Josh Rawich. He's the president of the Baseball Hall of Fame onto the podcast, and that was great for us, just because Josh was a class act, and just him telling the stories, what it was like to, you know, be someone that lives in, you know, basically is in the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame, and you know, his job is he wakes up every day and he goes to the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. So some really fun stuff as far as him talking about getting the job. And so I think this was a really good point. I think this is the spot right here.
With that impressive resume, I guess the first question is, how'd you wind up in Cooperstown? I mean, you're a SoCal boy. So how did you wind up in wintry, cold Cooperstown?
Well, it's funny. Right before we started recording this, John Shestakovsky from our office came in and said, did you ever think you would think a 35-degree day was nice? But he saw me tweet something about how the weather was cool. Like, honestly, 6 months ago, 7 months ago, I would have been like, God, 50 is just awful. And now 50 is what we aspire to. But realistically, you grow up, you know about Cooperstown, you hear about the Hall of Fame. It's this incredible place. Excuse me. And you kind of – nobody ever thinks like, hey, maybe I'll work there someday. It's not really – when you're at a club, I think we tend to think more about other clubs. But when this opportunity opened up and Jeff Idelson, the former president, called and said, hey, I think you'd be an incredible candidate for this if you would ever be interested. I just remember coming home and saying to my wife, like, you're not going to believe the call I got today. Like, who gets considered for a job like that? And she said, how would you ever turn something like that down if you got it? It's such an incredible opportunity. And so ultimately, I guess that's how I ended up here, is that Jeff, among others, I guess, identified me as somebody who might be a good fit. And then as I went through the interview process and came and saw the town for myself from a living here perspective, not a visitor, I just fell in love with it and it just felt right.
How's the adjustment been going? I mean, obviously, I'm sure the winters is a rude awakening in some respects, you know, to get used to, for especially if you're from Southern California.
Yeah, I mean, I did go to school in Indiana, so I had 4 years where winter, at least I had some idea. But you're right, nothing quite compares you for this past weekend, almost 8 to 10 inches. And the funny thing is the cold hasn't really bothered me as much as I thought it would. In some weird ways, it's kind of like where I came from in Arizona. People would say, how do you live in 115 degree heat? And it's like, well, I don't stand around outside when it's dead of August and July. Like, you go from your air-conditioned car to your air-conditioned house, to your air-conditioned office, and that's essentially what you do here. Obviously, the other way around with the heat, with your heat instead of your air conditioning. But I guess I think the part that I underestimated that I just forgot about is what cold does to your house, to your, the things that like you have to think about that we just, I mean, we purchased a house and we didn't like the curtains that were on there, so we took them down, not realizing that they were helping keep some of the heat in. Probably not the smartest idea. But we're learning along the way. We're having a blast. We're totally engaged in the community here. Kids are into school here. My wife's involved in a number of nonprofits locally, and everybody's made friends. It's really, we've adjusted really, really well.
So that's a great little spot where, again, he talks about his job. Because, again, Josh Roberts came from Arizona. So he was coming from Arizona. So that was, again, when we had Josh Roberts on. Again, it's a great episode. I don't want to spoil too much of it, but definitely tune into that one. That actually episode is dated, I want to say, where is my little date thing? March 14th of this year. So it was a real big one. Pete really did a great job of getting... you know, people together with us and to join us. But it's a great episode. It, you know, so check that one out on Spotify, iTunes, whichever one you use. And then, the episode that came after that was our season preview. And we also talk about our Vegas trip. So there's some great stories on there. That was a great episode. I tell the story about walking in on Swo and Wally inside the corduroy Instagram room. That's a great little story there. But we do a season preview as well. We'll get you ready. And then our last episode together of the first season was last week, and or 2 weeks ago now, where the White Sox were in the throes of the losing streak, the injury bug was hitting, and Pete was at wit's end at that point. Pete was at wit's end, and so it's great to see. You know, I can't wait to see Pete and be back on next week with Pete as we kind of tour back into this. But he's at Sox game tonight, so I'm sure he's gonna have a blast. But tonight's the night that I think the White Sox really erupt, so I hope he'll see a big output tonight for the White Sox. I'm not super sold on the Cubs playing well tonight. Cubs literally played last night at Sunday Night Baseball, and then had to be in, that was at Wrigley, and then they were in San Diego today for a game. So, but so was Frank Schwindel. Frank Schwindel had to fly a red eye this morning out of Chicago, and he was sitting in the middle seat. Someone spotted him on the middle seat and started the whole flurry, and 3 hours later, after all of us on Twitter had confirmed it through other sources, then Gordon Whitmire decides to tell everybody per sources Frank Schwindel is being called back up after being sent down last night. Like, thanks, per sources, per it was on the internet for 3 hours, bruh. So that was kind of a big thing. So with that, Pete's at the game tonight, so I'm not going to keep too much longer. Like I said, I can't believe I've gone for an hour. I'm actually pretty shocked and impressed with myself. I guess I am narcissistic enough to talk for an entire hour without really having a conversation with anybody but myself. But then again, I sing in the shower, and I applaud myself in the shower for multiple... Never mind. Last but not least, I know that some of you guys got to see Doctor Strange this week, so I am going to give you a drop of film review real quick before I get you guys out of here. For those of you that are Marvel fans, Doctor Strange came out this past weekend. M-O-M, Multiverse of Madness, on Mother's Day weekend. Mom. And it's a film that's very strong on mother, children, love. That came out this weekend. And the Doctor Strange movie, you know, I think expectations were extremely high thanks to the results and what we saw with the Spider-Man No Way Home film, which was just incredible. And I think expectations were that they were going to continue down that path. A lot of people expected the Loki tie-ins and the Kang the Conqueror. And it turned out that it wasn't, you know, expectations always tend to ruin these types of things. And I think I had a different expectation. But the film did come out, and I went and saw it last Thursday. And it was an okay Marvel film. I don't think it's the greatest Marvel film of all time. I think it might barely crack the top 10. But, it does have a lot of Easter eggs. And the fan service is kind of a disrespectful fan service in a sense. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. They really, really play on our emotions and then rip the carpet right out from under us pretty quickly, abruptly. But it really could be called Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch. It really is a two-person performance on this, with obviously the other stuff, you know, the stories in between. But the visuals are absolutely great. Sam Raimi, the director, is one of my favorite directors. You know, Evil Dead, Army of Darkness. He's got, you know, obviously the original Spider-Man trilogy that built the MCU. But you had these, you have his quintessential storytelling techniques and his visuals, whether it's the POV with the lowered frame rate for the demons, or the contortion with the body, the crackling sound that they make when the whole body's like contorting. And so you see a lot of those elements in the Sam Raimi stuff in there, but it's still a beautiful, beautifully filmed film. The visuals are excellent. It's just, it, it, it felt rushed a little bit. It felt you could tell that there were the reshoots. What I think I know what the reshoots were just based on having experienced it, because some things felt a little bit like, what? Like, okay. And so the Illuminati stuff was pretty cool. I don't think that's a spoiler anymore if you've watched the trailers. But all in all, I mean, the film itself, I would say that it's a, you know, it's not the greatest Marvel film of all time. It's definitely not the worst. It's not like Eternals or anything like that, or Captain Marvel. But it does have, it can be disappointing to people that had different expectations. And again, we go into these films, especially comic book films, and we know all the source material a lot of the times. And it makes it very difficult to enjoy certain stuff if you come in with that mentality, because some of these are inspired by stories, but they're not the exact story because they've got to take creative liberties inside the MCU as opposed to the Marvel Universe, which has thousands and thousands and thousands of stories and planets. And we're just now getting off of Earth 616 or whatever, and we're finding out that there's other multiverses. So don't go in with an open mind. And it's not a horrible film by any means. I've had friends tell me it's horrible, though. And I've had friends that think it's pretty good, but I haven't had anybody tell me that they thought it was like freaking fantastic. But what was fantastic is the wonderful trailer that airs just before the film starts. And that is awesome. If you haven't seen it, it did get released this morning. I would show you guys the trailer, but it's hard on the podcast. You're not gonna be able to hear it. But Avatar Way of the Water trailer, the first trailer, first footage we've seen of the new Avatar film from James Cameron, 13 years after the original, is gorgeous. And it's about a minute and a half. And it really is just really, it seems like the theme is family. It looks like Jake Sully has a family now. It looks like he has like one Navi child and one human-ish child with dreadlocks. And he has a family at this point. And so it looks pretty good. The visuals look fantastic. The animation and the facial capture is crystal clear. The resolution is smooth. And so that airs right before. So if you are going to see Doctor Strange, two reasons to get there ahead of time. That one first. But before that one airs, obviously there's a Thor trailer. But there's also, they show, and most theaters have been showing this, a excerpt, a short scene or short segment from the new Top Gun film, which if you haven't already, Yumper and Swo have been trying to get, they got a theater rented out. They're going to actually have a party, kind of a party thing, where you guys come and watch the movie with everybody. I don't think I'm going to be able to make it out there myself. I'm traveling a lot. I'm still trying, but it's a lot to ask for. I just, you know, the Cancun trip and I'm going to New York and then I'm going to Santa Barbara and a lot of trips are going on all at the same time. So if I can, I'll make it. But if I can't, you know, I'll try. I'll be there in spirit. But Top Gun, they show this excerpt from Top Gun, and I swear to God, and I was texting Yumper and Swo and Pete during this. Holy smokes! The minute I was done watching that, whatever window into the new Top Gun film, I cared like zero about Doctor Strange. Like, I was like, can you just keep playing the Top Gun movie? Because I want that now. It was fantastic, exciting, testosterone driven, energy, woo, adrenaline, let's go. So if you get a chance to go, when you're going to see Doctor Strange, make sure you're there. I would say get there with at least 10 minutes to go before the, so don't be 10 minutes late. If the movie starts at 7, don't get there any later than 7:10. We know that there's 20 minutes of trailers before any of these big feature films. So you do have 20 minutes. For me, because I go to AMC, I also know that I have the Nicole Kidman stupid movies. Somehow heartbreak feels great in a place like this stupid thing that she does beforehand. So I knew I could run to the bathroom after all those trailers. So you have all that time. So make sure you're there, but don't be 10 minutes late or beyond 10 minutes late. You're going to miss some really cool stuff. Especially if you're like a movie trailer nerd like I am. So those were two really cool things that aired before. And also, if you get a chance, by the way, if you're a Godfather fan, The Offer is a show that's right now on Paramount Plus. I'm enjoying it. It's not super accurate, but it's fun. And it's the making of The Godfather and the whole hell that they went through to make that film, and how they had to fight the suits and the corporate owners, as well as dealing with the drama of the Italian-American protests of the film itself, saying that it was going to be, you know, portray, you know, Italians in a negative manner, the fights that they had with Frank Sinatra, who hated the fact that the Fontaine, Johnny Fontaine character was based on him. And then, you know, it's fun though. And it's with Miles Teller. Let's see here. Who else is in that cast? Miles Teller's in it. In fact, if you have seen the movie, seen Watchmen, Matthew Good, who plays Ozymandias, is Robert Evans, the legendary producer. If you're a friend of, if you've watched, if you ever watch Entourage, Robert Evans is the inspiration for the character on Entourage. Is this something you might be interested in? It's what is the name? He was actually angry over the character though, but Bob Ryan is the name of the character played by Martin Landau on Entourage. Robert Evans is that guy. He even for the Entourage episode, he let them actually film in his house, but he was furious about his portrayal because they make him look like an idiot. But he actually was a big time player in Hollywood at the time. If you're a fan of Dan Fogler, who was just most recently in the Fantastic Beasts show or film, who played the Muggle, Dan Fogler, also from Balls of Fury. He's hilarious. He's great. He is excellent as Francis Ford Coppola. Justin Chambers as Marlon Brando is really impressive. Giovanni Ribisi as Joe Colombo. Juno Temple, fresh off of her popularity from Ted Lasso, plays Betty McCart, another, I think she's a fictitious character based on a couple of different characters. Colin Hanks plays Barry Lapidus. And you've got these other characters that pop in here. The guy, Anthony Ippolito, the guy that plays Al Pacino, is incredible. Michael Gandolfini makes an appearance, James Gandolfini's son. Lou Ferrigno is even in it as Lenny Montana. But basically, if you didn't know who Lenny Montana was, he was a real-life mobster that played Tattaglia. Luca Brasi, excuse me, Luca Brasi. So Lou Ferrigno plays Luca Brasi guy, which is pretty funny. Tommy Lucchese is played by Michael Rispoli. You'd recognize him a little bit. Eric Balfour, you might know him from, I want to say he was on 6 Feet Under. But all these different characters, it's really interesting to watch how they portray these characters. And these are real life people as well. Patrick Gallo, who plays Mario Puzo, is really great too. And it's just fun to watch how these dudes, how these performances bring out that drama. And I tell you what, since I started watching the show, I've been watching Godfather documentaries on YouTube after document. And some of them are really bad, but some of them are really fun. Because again, Al Pacino, they didn't want him. The studio hated him. In fact, you know, Marlon Brando wasn't going to happen. These are things they had to take out a $1 million insurance policy on him. So it's really fun to hear some of the stories. And it is from Robert Evans, or not Robert Evans, from Al Ruddy, who was the producer on the film that Robert Evans hired. He had done, Hogan's Heroes was the film or the TV show that he had produced. And so they said, you can do this on a budget, go for it. And so Al Ruddy has a reputation. Al Ruddy is interesting too, but look up Robert Evans, especially look at the life that that dude lived. I mean, at one point he was also, I believe, the inspiration for the character in True Romance. The cocaine deal at the end of True Romance. He has been played in film so many times. The Kid Stays in the Picture is about him. He's been played by, he's a pretty well-known dude. He produced Rosemary's Baby, Chinatown, obviously The Godfather, you know, and so, an interesting guy. So he lived a full life, but a really interesting life, you know, and The Kid Stays in the Picture, also a fantastic film if you ever get a chance to see that, or the real documentary about him as well. But all right, so we kind of talked about that a little bit, but again, this is going to conclude. I'm going to go ahead and put a pin on this now. I don't want to go too long. This is as long as I think I've ever talked to myself in my entire life, other than maybe like a drive to San Diego when I was alone in the car, but usually that's music time. So I do appreciate you guys tuning in, especially you guys that stay in the chat. My God, you guys are saints for this. My girlfriend can't even stand to hear me talk this long a period of time. But I do appreciate you guys. This is our 1 year anniversary show. This is our season finale for season one of The Tainted Glove. We have finished our first season. The next episode you will get will be next week. Episode one, season two. I'm really thankful for the year that I've had with my guy, Aloha Mr. Han, who again is at the White Sox game right now, being a good fan. He's probably walking into the 108 as we speak, or he's somewhere on the outer, out on the outer fringes. But again, tune in next week as we come back. But again, I wanted to just, you know, I know Pete feels the same way. I want to give you guys an absolute thank you guys for tuning in for this first year. We really do appreciate it. And as Pete always says, we know your time is very valuable. So we appreciate you sharing that with us. We enjoy doing this. We've had a blast doing this. You know, we do this because we love it. We love talking. We love talking sports, baseball, film, music, all of that great stuff. And we do appreciate you guys tuning in to the show on a regular basis and giving us those listens. So I do, for me especially, thank you from Pete. Obviously, he's always very, very thankful and we appreciate you guys. So that's all I really have. You know, be good people. You guys have a fantastic, absolutely fantastic week. Again, watch the White Sox here. Watch them explode tonight. I'm calling it. I'm going to put up some runs. I don't know about the Cubs, though. So hopefully the next time we're all talking together again, everything is going well with you and yours. I wish you guys nothing but blessings. And again, to my guy, Pete. Pete, I know that you may listen to this. You might not. But your dance moves are sweet. And I know that you're very appreciative of all this opportunity as well. So thank you guys again for tuning in. We'll see you guys again next week. And with that, in the words of my good friend, Aloha, Mr. Hand, Aloha.
Words I think are funny. Peacock. Cockpit. Gamecock. Cock. Yeah, dog.